Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
How we sound, our very accents can define us, determine how people perceive us, often unfairly, and the way the vowels bounce or slurp or chip out of our mouths can immediately kind of label us in the ears of the listener. And look, are we of their status in society? Are we their superior or their inferior? These things go through everyone's mind regardless of how indiscriminate you might believe yourself to be. So Accents is the title of the play and the subject. It's a play going on tour in theatres across the country, written and starring Emmett Kerwin. Welcome back, Emmett.
Thanks for having me.
This is a subject very dear to your heart.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of study into it, a lot of thought.
Really? Do we have a peculiar relationship with accents in Ireland? Is it different to the...
I don't think it's different from anywhere else in the world. I think everybody does it. And people make value judgments based on how we sound. It's a way of, you know, assigning, is someone a threat, you know, to another person? I think we were chatting before about accommodation. So when you're talking to somebody, your accent accommodates to their accent. Mm-hmm. If you like them and if you don't like them, your accents become separated and become more entrenched. Yeah. So your accent modulates the sound of it, modulates to the person. And it's a way of sending out that we're not a threat to them. We like them. But if we don't, our accents become more different, you know, as we're talking to people.
How did you study this kind of thing?
I did a little bit of it in college and just working in theatre, because studying accents and then teaching them as well to drama students. But the show, when I sat down to write it and then figured out the name of the show, I've done kind of a lot of in-depth study. Now, I should say, I am a dilettante in all of this. It's like any playwright. You pick a subject, you read it for 2 years, and you become an expert and tell everyone what you think you know. Yeah. And then after it goes away, you know.
When you get creative with it, you know, the kind of scientific elements have to be put aside for a moment,
and it's been really fun chatting to academics about it and studying about it, you know. So I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole a good bit over the last number of years with it, you know.
We all know somebody, and we've definitely met them, who would criticise the way someone speaks. Yeah. And say, you know, terrible diction.
Yes.
They use coded language, don't they?
Yeah. I think that's the thing about people making value judgments on a person's accent. So I think for a long time in Ireland, especially in a country that was quite homogenous, people, if they wanted to differentiate themselves from other people, would assign, you know, a lot of value judgments, or they'd make judgments about where they live, what type of house they live in, all based on how they sound. And a lot of the time as well, especially with nascent middle classes coming into being in countries like Britain and America, especially in the 18th and 19th century, they would mimic how the upper class spoke. So then the upper class would change how they spoke. And the working class would copy the middle class. So it kind of goes in this weird cycle where you would find it could actually go on a loop where maybe the working class are sounding like the very, very upper class sounded maybe 100 or a few years ago.
And whichever is the kind of cool accent to emulate. For broadcasting, for example, when I listen to Archive, people kind of try to sound really British, don't they? Received pronunciations.
In the UK with the BBC, an edict went out when they first started that the presenters could only be from public schools and have accents from the home counties. Wow. So then in the 1960s and 70s, you started to get more regional voices, and because of free tour level education in the post-war period, Clement Attlee and so forth, you know, you had actors like Tom Courtney and Michael Caine all of a sudden coming into a world that was almost exclusively the realm of public school boys. And I don't know if anything was ever in
that
here.
That obviously informs the Irish, because we're behind, you know, our TV radio.
You kind of figure, you go, you know, who is the proto-accent, you know, and these things exist in a kind of microcosm. So, like, nobody in Ireland talks like an Irish newscaster, you know. But I was just listening to the radio there. The one I always find funny, English broadcasters started to say issues, and Irish news people say issues. But now they've actually started to drop the S altogether, and then they're just saying issues.
Issues.
I've heard someone say issues. I was like, well, that's new. So what happens is these things exist in a kind of microcosm that can live in a town, in a friend group that's small, and in professions, you know, if you listen to somebody on a plane giving the air hostesses, they have a very specific intonation.
They do.
You know, broadcasters.
So they're copying the OG?
Who knows?
Nobody knows.
Who's the original proto person? There's probably someone hidden in a basement downstairs, like a Brian Dobson 101, you know, that everybody is copying what they say.
So newsreaders think they're in their own little microcosm.
I think it is. And it's obviously influenced by where they're from and their own voice. Mm. But then they come into the field and think, oh, well, this is the way I have to sound, so I need to copy this particular enunciation and pronunciation.
Look, I think it's not that long ago they hung a dinner jacket at the back of the door in a studio for newsreaders so that you would have this suddenly sit up differently and
treat
the script. Yeah,
clothes make the man. Yeah, yeah.
Some people can change their accent, and if they continue all through life with the accent that they were born with and grew up with, we see that as a sign of all pure authenticity of that person, don't we?
Yeah, it's tough. There's a study that I was reading about working class people and people from farming backgrounds or rural communities feeling when they come into third level education, this is specific to Ireland, feel the need to change their accent to sound much more middle class. Mm. Especially if they come to a college maybe in South County Dublin. So they'll find themselves having to rid themselves of their own family or their own town's accents, which is kind of a shame. Yeah. And they think they need to do it in order to get ahead. And we think that we need to do that in order to get ahead, maybe in business and in life. So what happens is your accent is actually whatever comes out of your mouth when you're angry or when you're...
That's the true...
That's the true accent.
True you.
And what you sound like when you're speaking to your friend group that you grew up with. So that's your true accent. And when you go into the workspace, you might find yourself changing it, putting on your phone voice as an expression, you know. So, you know, and even now I'm speaking slowly in order to be understood. I'm doing it right now.
Naturally be very conscious of your accent.
Just conscious, yeah. And as well.
But you've kept, your accent has never changed, I'd imagine.
I think I've tried to maintain it. I've made a concerted effort to try and maintain it. But I think even when I go home, it becomes the Tala accent is a little bit more nasal, kind of goes up here and it's a little, so we kind of talk to God, must you let me brother have this kind of accent, you know? And so I find myself even dropping down slightly an octave when I'm on radio.
Because my Monaghan accent has now been well worn out.
But you can hold on to the odd vowel here and there.
And obviously you go home, it's completely different depending who you're talking to.
And all of a sudden then you revert back because you're using less English as well. You don't need to use as much language in order to be understood by your family or your peer group.
Okay, because the language has been set.
You have a shorthand.
You know? So, never looked at it that way.
Yeah.
Because you can't introduce new words.
I discovered
when I was about seven and started saying superb.
I know, I used the word malice one time in Tala and someone looked at me and said, you've changed, man. And there was no irony in that. He was deadly serious. I'd gone to college and I said, don't think there's any malice in the fella. And he said, what? Who are you? Yeah. Frankenstein.
Stop talking like a novel.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned a phone voice. Someone's actually literally texting saying, my nanny was born in 1905, passed away in 2005, so a century. Just like someone from the royal family, she would put on a posh accent when picking up the phone or if new people came by. That's from Eddie. The phone voice is probably dead now, I would imagine, because there's a generation don't even use the phone.
I think, but when you're interfacing with maybe a state apparatus, or you know, when people ring doctors and stuff like that, the deference that we would have towards people of authority or something, all of a sudden voices tend to change, you know. So I'd like to make an appointment, please, you know. So it depends when you're talking to and who you're talking to, you know.
Or worse, when there's one of those machines and suddenly you have to speak like you are a machine, how
are we going to talk to AI? That's the thing.
Some people do have to change their accents. They move from place to place, even if it's within Ireland, county to county.
Yeah.
I was thinking actually before you were coming in that English people who live in Ireland, they really stand out and they're very conscious of it.
Yeah.
Even though they go back home and they're told, why do you sound like you're Irish?
Now you sound Irish. Yeah. So you live in this kind of hinterland between the both sounds. But yeah, it's a shame because ultimately your accent is a signifier of your family, your town, your heritage. So you've all of these different things going into your accent, and it's a thing to be proud of, I think. And it's actually quite a shame to say to people, and we do it, I think even drama lessons, people would say, you know, elocution, these, that's, thems and those. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that all people with all accents, even in this country, so many, are mangling the English language, you know. So like South County Dublin would put SH sounds on T sounds, like favourite.
Yeah, it gets but very soft.
It's favourite.
Tonight.
Yeah, but if we were to all speak phonetically and correctly and precisely and crisply, we'd all kind of sound a little silly. Because it'd be a kind of forced formality, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a Dublin accent, for example, you know, working class Dublin accent would replace the T with a glottal So you might say matter. And then a middle class one might tap the two T's and turn it into matter. And then a very posh accent might say matter. But all three are wrong.
Nobody's saying matter.
Nobody's saying matter.
Weird.
Yeah, it sounds strange.
What's the matter?
So the idea of somebody from Ireland correcting another person or saying speak correctly. They're usually probably not speaking correctly.
We drop that middle T like all over the country,
all
don't
over
we?
This,
like
yeah.
be Wahar.
Wahar.
And Tipperary yeah. be Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just disappears.
Just goes all together.
Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday, yeah. it just sounds silly, you know.
What do you think about the Americanization? Because that feels like the one that people are most putting on.
This is... there's a professor of linguistics, Stephen Luchik, who is in UCD, and he was pointing out a study to me where EastEnders, in a control group from a town in, I think it was Aberdeen, they found that EastEnders had actually changed how they spoke. So it's about the... They changed how they spoke H sounds. So that's just London to Scotland,
okay,
which is quite localised.
Yeah.
It's within the same island. But I think with the American accent, and we were talking about this before, I find it funny because the Midwestern accent is heavily influenced by the Scots-Irish or the Ulster Scots. And that cowboy accent became quite popular with B-movies in the Depression era. You know,
yeah.
films that John Wayne would have made before Stagecoach. They all, those actors, that is, were copying this kind of copy of a copy of a copy of a cowboy accent, which is the Scots-Irish accent mixed with German and Swedish. And then when those films became popular in the 40s and 50s and then became the television...
Is that definitive?
This is all now, as I should say, taken with a pinch of salt. And if anyone is a professor of linguistics, but what I find funny is I think...
But it's a study theory.
Yeah, that is about the... Scots-Irish actually influencing the American cowboy accent, absolutely. That accent was very much influenced by that. So they were copying that. So the television voice of TV actors in the 60s and 70s, Rawhide, Bonanza, and the accent, let's say, Leonardo DiCaprio is doing in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
So
okay.
that accent then influenced heavily how American actors, and even could influence Irish people.
Because of the fake accent.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a huge impact, obviously, because it's
television,
it's almost...
film, radio, all of these things influence how we speak. So in a way, people in South County Dublin who are mimicking that Americanized Californian accent, they're probably closer to people in Belfast than they have been since partition. So you know what that means, Oliver.
So for people who are already texting in Americanization, I'm a teacher of teenagers. It's unbelievable how many of them speak with a strong American twang. It breaks my heart. Love our nation's accents. So they might have a discussion in the classroom.
But what will happen is they'll go to college and they'll get a different accent.
Yeah.
And it will change. They will have another influence and they will change. They'll modulate their accents.
Kids
to kind of
would tend to match whatever accent their parents are, no matter where they're living in the world. But when they go to become 12, 13, when puberty hits, and now, because they're trying to fit in with their parents and at home, now they want to fit in with their colleagues in school, with their friends.
All it will
their
take
accent
is
totally switches.
A cool kid or a dominant personality in the social group to say, why do you have an American accent? And literally the next day they'll come back in with something else, you know. So there's lots of kids at the minute because Bluey's quite popular. I think my little fella even said Mom one day or something like that, and I was like, okay, that's the last of that now.
Is Bluey American accents or
Australian?
Or Australian?
Yeah.
Oh wow, okay.
So no more Bluey in this.
Which again would be kind of semi-English, semi-Irish accent.
Yeah,
that's what Australian
it's
from.
A lot more, all Irish accents are rhotic, so we pronounce our R's. Welsh and Scottish accents are rhotic, so we pronounce both R's in the word. So if an R precedes a vowel sound, you pronounce it like ro. And if an R follows a vowel sound in a rhotic accent, we pronounce it. But in a non-rhotic accent, which is closer to London, you drop the R sound. So Rover becomes Rover, you know. And then Belfast accent's heavily rhotic. They pronounce all their R's, you know.
Jumping back to that American thing, because musically they're quite similar northern accents, and people with a strong northern accent, which I'd say would be Belfast.
Yeah.
You know, it's much slender, kind of around Derry, Fermanagh, place like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a gentler accent.
Yeah.
But that musically, people will know immediately from Rory McIlroy, golfers who go to America, they slip so easily into an American accent because they're pretty much, they're so similar.
I think they are similar. They, when you hear BBC or, you know, radio broadcasters up the north, they kind of talk, you know, coming up later on now on BBC radio, that can kind of slip down really easy.
The DJs. Actually.
Yeah, I find they slip really easy. They sound like they're from Nashville or something, you know. And I think that's probably why country and Western.
I have to mention your Gloria Honeyford theory at this stage.
Well, Gloria Honeyford, you know, beautiful kind of, she's doing a spoken word album of Christmas hits this year. She has that... I think that's that what I was saying about the, you know, Midwestern accent that's very much closer to kind of a Belfast accent that's very beautiful. That can
she tailored it for a British audience.
Yeah, but it's actually closer kind of to an American sound because the London accent is non-rhotic, so they drop the roars, whereas the Laurie, I wouldn't, you know.
Because Rory McIlroy now will just speak like an American accent, yeah. Even though there's a bit of North still in there, but you can't really tell the difference.
It's because they're so close, though, you know. It's because they're so close.
Okay, so the Americanized teenagers, they're Northerners.
They're basically from Belfast, that's it.
What situation would you change your own accent, do you find yourself suddenly?
It's funny, I think... You do, you have to, it's called code switching. And I think anyone who lives in this country and finds themselves, it's usually when you're interfacing with something that's official, you kind of find, okay, is this person going to treat me differently if I go in and go, well, I have an appointment. And that's, it shouldn't, it should, but if I said, sorry, I have an appointment, you know, and what happens is...
But we immediately put them into a particular
I, no,
status.
I wouldn't, I'm trying to no, not to. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that we find ourselves having to do that code switching in and out of different accents in order to be accepted because we think that we might not be taken seriously, you know, which is problematic.
Text, we'll go to text. Oliver, please ask your guest, Emma Kerwin, to write a play on the disappearing letter T. Well, you have.
Yeah.
He's doing it. What is the show about? What happens in accents?
Accents is, I wrote it in collaboration with my friend Owen French. It is a 12, or it's 8 poems that have been written in the 12 hours before my wife gives birth to our son, and set during COVID times, and it's kind of a love letter to my wife, a love letter to my son, and then what would happen to a person. My family's from, but my mother would have grown up in inner city Dublin, and because I'm in Holles Street, and I kind of take this journey through Dublin. It's kind of about the anthropological shift of voices and how they sound, and then when those working class communities were pushed to places like Crumlin and then to Tallaght, how our voices sound and what that does to us through our lives, and the new voices that we then give to we give to our sons, we give to our children, and how our lives are shaped by where we're from and our family history. So we've done all of that in spoken word poetry with music that's been composed by the late Owen French.
He's a young man who
sadly
passed away.
Yeah, Owen passed away in August. He was like a really beautiful man. He was an incredible singer, songwriter. He was an architect. He was a teacher. He was a dad, husband, father, son. You know, he was a son and brother. And he performed under the musical project Talos. And he released multiple albums, and he, or anyone who would have seen him or heard him sing, could attest to, you know, the kind of beauty of his voice and how he sounded and his lovely accent. And so I'd encourage anybody who, you know, on Spotify, listen to him. His name is Owen French, and he performed under the musical project Talos.
Talos, yeah, really good. That's very sad, but a nice way to pay tribute all the same.
Yeah,
going on tour.
Yeah, we're going on tour, and it's his music. He scored all the music to this, and it's a beautiful score that he's made. And, you know, we chatted before he passed. You know, you want people to hear his music and hear his voice and hear the art that he made, because if we didn't, it would just disappear. Because of the ephemeral nature of theatre, you know, if it doesn't come back.
That's right.
It's not heard. Yeah. So, you know, we were planning and right up, you know, all the way through last year to do this. So, yeah, we're taking it on the road, and we want people to really hear his
music.
You're
moved by this, aren't you? This has affected you as well as a
friend. I think it did. You know, he was a really kind of an incredible presence in the lives of everyone who knew him, and that was evident in the way his life was celebrated when he passed, the kind of outpouring of grief for him, how much his music moved people and how many people were at his funeral and the way they celebrated his life. And, you know, he was a lovely, beautiful man.
I'm always thinking of funerals, and people probably use their real accents at a funeral as well.
They very much do, yeah. That's because they're talking to everyone. They grew up with.
There's a message here that says, I've a strong Kerry accent. I have been mocked for it regularly throughout my life. It drives me crazy.
But that's those kind of micro things that people do in workplaces, and it's something that you need to stamp out, you know. Well, someone walks in and they go, ah, you have a different accent, you're different and funny. But think how funny that is if they were to do something like that about someone's physical appearance.
Yeah.
It would be, you know, you get a letter from HR.
Some of the accents down the south, like Kerry and particularly Cork City, maybe not so much all of Cork, but those accents don't tend to change.
No.
Micheál Omerhearty commentated all his life in a Kerry accent.
Yeah.
Brendan Kennelly, the poet who was in Dublin all his life, kept the Kerry going. It's musically strong.
Where's John Creedon from?
John Creedon's Cork.
Is he Cork? Yeah. Well, look, yeah. His beautiful accent. You know,
he does, yeah,
and he's never changed. He leans into it, but I think it's lovely when people can maintain their accent and it becomes because it's part of their identity and they don't.
No, you're right. He is leaning into it.
He is leaning into it because it's proudly. Yeah. And so you should. That's my point. Yeah.
There's also the point that we possibly were not meant to speak the English language, and that's why we have so many different accents in a small island. Because we had different dialects of Irish, and we've had to adapt.
And the syntax of the sentence structure. Is obviously in Irish, and how Irish is spoken is then just used in
exactly the same musically, exactly the same, isn't it? Yeah, particularly down around the south of the country where you go up and down like that, and it can be exactly the same as Australia.
And it's the accents as well developing over hundreds, if thousands of years before the train came along, because everybody was essentially isolated. You know, if you were somewhere in the wilds of Kerry and you were somewhere in Belfast, these two accents may never meet, but they are on the same island, you know.
I love your whole thing that the accents are, you've got your accent for the world and then an accent for within your own family. So my husband says he knows when I'm on the phone to my brother, as the Big Tip accent comes out very strongly. So you're in your own environment wherever you are.
It's your own environment and your own language, your own shorthand develops, which is lovely, I think.
Please ask your guest to give the correct pronunciation of book, says Gay in Tullow. Ah, correct pronunciation is a loaded expression.
It is. And here's what I'll tell you what my mother has told me. My mother says book has two O's, so it's book. I said, but it's actually book. And a Polish person corrected me before. He said, why do Irish people say book? Or it's book is B-U-K. Hmm. I don't know. So I say book. My mother says Facebook.
Yeah.
And I
in Monaghan and Cavan around the north Louth, it's book as well.
Yeah.
The book.
But my mum will stand by that. She'll on that rock, she will stand and defend it. She says it's book. It's B-O-O-K. So there you go. There's a double vowel sound, so there's an elongation of the vowels. And we usually, all accents are dictated by how we elongate vowel sounds. So that's a double vowel sound. So we should be holding on to that O, holding around on that O for a little bit longer.
That's a real test for me. The way people pronounce the DART train service depends on the stop. It's alternately the DART, the DART, the DORT. In Killiney, it's the DORSH.
Yeah.
And you get to praise the bleeding train.
The train.
Two syllables.
With the DORT. And DORT is funny because they're putting it, there's no double vowel sound in there. So with that kind of Russell Carroll Kelly thing, it's a sliding vowel. So they're saying DORT, you know. They're putting in a diphthong in there that doesn't exist. So that's placing something into it. But that's done again as well to differentiate themselves from the other people from the north side that might say
we literally dart. Call it the dart accent, but we never mean the north side of the dart.
Because they say dart because that's probably the proper pronunciation of it. So there you go, north side Dublin is speaking more correctly than south side Dublin. I'm just saying that now to wind people up.
But even we have Suda cream, which was originally soothing cream.
Oh yeah.
And the company realised, well, people around here are saying, get me the suit. Have you got the Sudan cream?
Sudan cream.
So Suda. Pseudo. So put a D. So that it.
So is it pseudo cream?
From the Irish. It's pseudo cream.
Pseudo
put
cream.
A D.
Right.
Yeah, so they took it out.
That's brilliant.
Sean Kelly and Stephen Roach had an unusual mix of French Irish accents.
Oh, wow.
Says Emmett to Emmett.
Says Emmett to Emmett.
That was
the river. Yeah.
And now we must tell people where this is happening.
Yes.
Accents opened in Dublin in January. Where in Dublin is it?
In the Ambassador Theatre.
Just renovated.
Yes, so if you haven't been in it, come back for the restored glory of this beautiful building. It's a lovely venue. It's great because, again, that is a mid-sized venue, 600 seats in Dublin. There hasn't been something of that size for years. So, you know, it's a brilliant venue. It's a beautiful space. We're doing three nights there.
With Mr. Parnell looking down.
Yeah.
And then you're going to tour, you go out to Tala. That's native lands.
The native lands. There's going to be a ticker tape parade, open top bus, obviously, you know, coming like shaking.
That's just you going home in general. Wicklow, Limerick, Cork and Galway. Where can people find the details exactly?
The details are on my website. They're on the websites of the Civic, the Mermaid Arts Centre in Bray, Galway, Town Hall and the Everyman Theatre and MCD for the Ambassador. And if they want to find any other details, they can see it on Emmett Kerwin Instagram.
Look up Emmett Kerwin. Yes.
That's all that
and stuff. Accents. Fine. Thanks, man, for coming in to us.
Thank you so much for
having
me.
Good luck to you now. Nice and one. Read plenty of books.
I will. Lots of books. Email.